William in.
Is that coming through okay? Is that loud? Is that working fine? It's okay. You guys do know that sound men hate me. Which, that is really the last guy in church you want to get mad at you. Because he's controlling the sound. A wonderful man you have working back there. I'll mention a couple things about the book table. two things I want to mention. Your pastor asked me to mention this because I just didn't think of it. A few years ago, we did seven production videos. By production videos, like if you go onto my YouTube channel, I've got like the teaching you got this or yesterday morning. Hours and hours and hours of that kind of teaching, where I'm standing there teaching it and so on. And then the production video is where we would basically take like an hour long teaching message and condense it to about 12 to 15 minutes. Very palatable. Very nice. Nobody gets offended, except the devil. And so I've had we have them on there. They're called What's the Big Deal? There you can find them two places. We have a website called What's the Big Deal about the KJV, and that's where you'll find them. Or you go to my YouTube address and scroll all the way down to the bottom because I think they're the first seven things that we put on some years ago. Now I will say this. We have had numerous testimonies of people looking at them and getting straightened out on the King James Bible. I don't know if this guy's still doing the job, but about 2 or 3 years ago, somebody said, are you ready for this? The head of the Presbyterian churches in Canada got converted to the King James Bible watching those videos. But the biggest testimony we have is from Bible believers who say, I sent my fill-in-the-blank, modern version friend, ESV, NIV, American Standard, said, I sent my modern version friend there, and it said they come away saying they got me thinking. And guys, if we get them thinking, that's the right track. So those are on there. Like I said, they're at bigdealkjv.com, or just go to, I don't know, go to YouTube, search Sam Gipp channel, and they're way down at the bottom. If you want anything from the book table, my wife wants to tell you, she's going to discount everything. I think every $30 book is now $29.99 tonight. And then 1 penny for shipping and handling. Is that cheap for shipping? You don't get that kind of handling, shipping, and handling? No. She's got some. Ladies like deals, and so she does deals. I never mess with it. If I stand back there, I just give them all away because I know nobody wants to pay for them. So she's got some kind of deal, so everything is discounted because we have to haul those out of there, and eventually they get shipped back to Cincinnati, shipped twice. If you are interested in anything from the publishing, my publishing company is daystarpublishing.com, Daystar Publishing. There's a charismatic minister on TV called Daystar, not associated, okay? We're just not. That's why I never say Daystar, I say Daystar Publishing. But if you get a prayer card, the web address, the phone number for the publishing company, just a couple hours south of you down in Cincinnati is on there. And anything, in fact, we've got a lot more than what's on the table. Pastor mentioned, I've written about 30 books, probably 32 or something like that. We publish about 24, 25 different authors. We have all kinds of stuff. We have posters. The guy that did my posters used to work for Mad Magazine. That should tell you something, okay? There's something. I say it this way, guys, and some of you will remember. You know, I was talking this morning about, remember when it was Coke and Pepsi? Remember when it was Crest and Colgate? You remember when the problem with professional athletes was they were proud, arrogant, and conceited? Now they're murderers, dope dealers, and rapists. And you go, oh yeah, that's awful. No, that's not awful. What's awful is, then some Christian dad puts a picture of one of those guys on his kid's bedroom wall. Like, oh, I hope he'll grow up to be like that. You better hope he doesn't. So we just have something better to put on the wall. So there's all kinds of stuff at Daystar Publishing. Go to our website. We got that PayPal. My people they get it out. They're very, very, very efficient. So that is all taken care of. This book called The Bread of Life. Again, I did not write this. This brother has since gone home to be with the Lord. But I'll tell you what, it's good. It's good for, I call it a general knowledge of the Bible. I get a lot of people that go, you got a book that just kind of from start to finish, tells me something about the Bible. And it does. I always, what I do is I read the table of contents and then give you a bachelor's degree. Here's what's covered in here. Repentance, the Trinity of God and man, necessity for salvation, understanding salvation, baptism of the Holy Spirit, walking in the Spirit, a study on faith, understanding prayer, forgiveness, the armor of God, Christian suffering, dispensations, the deity of Jesus Christ, which Bible is God's book, is the Bible true, study on water baptism, eternal security, all about hell, facts about tongues, separation, soul winning, what about tithing, what about tithing, what about tithing? I'm sorry, that's not in there three times. Just thought some of you probably needed to hear that three times. May 4. What about tithing, healing, the rapture, Christian judgment, the Antichrist? I think that Barack Obama is not mentioned by name in that section. Should have been. The millennium, white throne judgment. There's a chart on prophecy. There's a section on the world, on the flesh, one on the devil. Addictions, capital punishment, characteristics of God. Sound doctrine, gossip and slander. That is not a how-to chapter. I've never seen a Baptist ever needed any help. Sexual sins, two creations, fact or fiction, defeating your Goliath imaginations and fantasies. And so that book is back there. And you would know this, I would not. I got that understandable history of the Bible. And I get this, I can't believe people ask me this. They go, is that in Spanish? And I go, why would I want to print a book in Spanish on the history of the Bible, the Bible, the English Bible? And we don't have anything in Spanish except this book. So if you've got a Spanish-speaking Christian friend who wants a general knowledge of the Bible, just ask for the Bread of Life in Spanish. And I get into some churches, I preach in some Spanish-speaking churches, and it's been of help to them. So that is back there. all right, let me ask you a question. Do you ever put just books freestanding on a bookshelf? Not leaning against the end, they do what? Right? You got to put bookends. I wanted to do the bookend books for the King James Bible. Easiest, most difficult. No ego, I just thought it'd be nice to do. And so this one is the easy one. It's called A Time When There Was No Bible. I call it Baby's First King James Book. Now you go, you think we need to give the King James Bible to our kids? Yeah. Yeah, I do. You have public school, Christian school, all this other kind of schooling. And I know we have officially homeschooling, but you know there was a time when all education began on mom's lap. And that isn't happening anymore. And I figure it this way, mom, dad, give it to them right out the door. There was a time in this country if a kid was leaving high school, 12th grade, secular school, going to college, secular college, In that 3 months, somebody would come up to that guy and say, hey, when you go to college, don't get on drugs. Now you got to tell a kid going from the sixth grade to the seventh grade that. There was a time when a kid graduating from Christian school, going to a Bible college, somebody would get a hold of him and say, look, when you get to Bible college, don't let them take your Bible away from you. Now they're losing it in their homeschooling. Let's give it to them on their mother's lap. I've gotten this testimony from many brokenhearted grandparents. We raised our son or our daughter in this church. They know the King James Bible is the perfect Word of God. Now they go to a church, they use any version whatsoever, and our grandkids are not getting the truth about the King James Bible. And here's what I recommend to the grandkids. Get the book, invite the grandkids over, and corrupt them. That's what grandparents are for. Spoil them and send them home. So that I did. And then when I did the roughs, when I did the roughs for this, I said it's my graphics lady. She sent me back the raw drawings in pen and ink. And when I looked at them, I was struck by an idea like, what's easier than a coloring book. Now, I got to tell you something, guys. When I got saved, I didn't like to read. I knew I had to read for what I was going to do. So I cultivated an interest in reading, and now I really love reading. I read my Bible. I read about 3 or 4 or 5 books at a time. How many of you people, like me, you just really enjoy reading? Okay. All you who did not raise your hands. Now, I will apologize. We don't have numbers for the colors. Get an adult. They'll help you. But and basically, it is this book, a little larger format. And I'll be honest. You know what sometimes they do? They get this. The kid looks at the color picture here, goes to this one, and colors it just like he saw it. Which, I saw that in action. I was in Montana. This pastor bought these for his grandson, and that night on the den floor of his grandfather preacher's house, he had both these books open, and he opened this book to a picture, opened this one to the same picture, and colored just like he saw it here. And that was how he got the people all the right shade of green. It's a very sick little kid, actually. But this one I did not write. This is called The Certainty of the Words. Brace yourself. That is over 800 pages on the supremacy of the English text of your King James Bible. I have had a lot of people that read it and they say it's blessed. I had one guy tell me, he said, that is the best book ever written on the King James issue. Stupid book. You probably don't want it. Living with Pain. I wrote this. I know whenever I say living with pain, everybody goes, did your wife write that? No, she didn't write this. Entirely too thin. She's working on a 2-volume set called Living with the Pain. But I broke my neck three months out of Bible college, a couple weeks after our first anniversary, working construction, fell 2 stories, broke my neck, ribs, head. My doctor didn't even look at the x-ray, sent me back to work. It was, like I said, almost 3 months before they fixed it. The damage was done by then, and basically every day is a day with pain. And there's a lot of people hurting. I don't mean emotionally. There are people hurting emotionally. But there are people, you know, they just have they have physical problems. I tell people this about getting older. You know, you know what a sure sign of getting older? You have pain where you didn't even know you had parts. I've been talking to my wife, and I go, oh, what's this? What hurts here? What do I have that hurts? I said, we're all born with little pain glands that don't even come online till after you're 50. In fact, young people, let me just warn you. After you're 50, every night while you're asleep, your body tries to kill you. It will take a whole day to get over the trauma. And just when you do, you have to go back to bed. But it does help some folks. I've had a lot of folks that have a problem with pain. It says it's been a help to them. And just like the book on dealing with a chronic illness, there's a chapter in here on salvation, and so you could pass that on to a lost friend who's dealing with pain. It may be a help to him. But like I said, those are back there, and Kathy will have the book table up for about 10 minutes, and then we're going to get on the road. We have to drive up to Canton and then take off for Cleveland Airport tomorrow morning to catch our plane back to Boise. You know, this COVID thing, I really think it's overblown. I'm not trying to be too critical, but you know, when I tested positive just before getting on the plane to come here, I mean, it hasn't affected me. It hasn't affected me. Anyway, we're gonna leave tonight right after the service. All right, guys, look, I like you. I really do. I like you. I love your pastor. I do. You know, he's talking about Christmas and the missionaries, and the very first time I preached for him was Christmas 1990 in Coast Rai, Micronesia. And I'm going to say, I'm telling you I love you, but I'm going to contend with you about something tonight, okay? Contend. And here's what I'm going to say. If I ask you tonight, are you saved, and you raise your hand and say, I'm not going to quiz you to try to show you you're really not saved. I don't do that. This happens very often in a sermon, or in a service. Somebody will say, how many of you love the Lord? Look, if I ask you tonight how many of you love the Lord, if you all put your hand up, I am not going to say, I think you're lying. I think somebody here is lying. Probably somebody is. Actually, if I ask you how many of you love the Lord, you think you're going to go, no. I mean, you're smart enough to put your hand up and at least pass for somebody that loves the Lord. So I don't have a problem with that. But I want you to turn in your Bible to 2 Timothy chapter 4, because there is a verse here, a passage, that I have found Christians all too flippantly raise their hand in response to it. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And it says this in verse 1. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. If any man also strive for masteries, yet he is not crowned unless he strive lawfully. Let us pray. Father, I am so glad, God, I know this. I don't mean this in a bad way, but I don't think anybody in this room could talk to the governor of this state tonight. If we had his number, if we called him, we wouldn't get him. There'd be somebody there to intercept the call. We couldn't get a hold of him. I would love to talk to our president, God, but I imagine if I tried to go talk to him, if I got on a plane and flew to D.C., they wouldn't let me just walk in and talk to him. But we can talk to the creator of the universe at the speed of thought. What a blessing. You are so kind. You did not give us a maze to have to navigate to get to you. All we have to do is just pray. And so we're praying tonight. As the pastor said, last service of this meeting, and it's not your last opportunity to deal with these people, but it's the last time I'll be preaching to them for till the next time. But God, we ask you to be here. Again, I really believe these people, they're not here because of me. They're here because of your book. They're here because of you. They'd like something from you. So please get Sam Gipp out of their way, out of your way. I pray, God, that you will speak to their hearts, that they would be edified by coming to church tonight, and they being edified would then leave here and live to your glory. In Jesus Christ's name I pray, amen. That third verse, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Now do not raise your hand. If I say, are you saved, you raise your hand, I'm not going to argue with you. If I say, do you love the Lord, put up your hand, I'm not going to say, I just don't really think you love the Lord. You have your hand up, but I think you're lying. I'm not going to say that. But I hear sometimes a preacher will say, how many are soldiers for Christ? Whoa, man, the hands go up. I take issue with that. Sometimes I think it is too easy for us to. I think we want to be, you know, we want to classify ourselves as like God's elite. We're the cutting edge. We're the ones that are doing the battles for God. And I'm going to talk to you tonight about being a soldier for Jesus Christ. I got to tell you, I got to kind of give you 3 years of my life, not day by day. But I have to tell you what happened when I was 16, when I was 17, when I was 18, and when I was 19. 3 years of my life. I went to public school, by the way. And to explain why I've never been in the military, I have people often, they go, you were in the military, were you not? I said, no, I've never been in the military. I have great appreciation, great respect for people that have been in the military. Your pastor was a Marine. I joke with him about that, but I'm telling you now, that is not a small thing. If you were in the military, if you are in the military, I greatly appreciate what you did or what you are doing. And I'll tell you what happened. When I was 16 years old, now, I know it's going to be hard for you to believe, but I was an unwanted child. I was born 2 years after my parents' last child. Now, think about that. They wanted a boy and a girl. They had my sister 4 years later, had my brother, and that was it. They said, okay, we got the boy, got the girl, we're done. Got rid of all the baby stuff. Ladies, diapers that did not dissolve when you washed them, okay? And got rid of all this stuff, and then 2 years later, I came along. I was what was known in 1950 as a surprise. Today, I would be known as an abortion. Now, think about those two words. Don't you think surprise is a better word? I mean, really, do you want to step into a dark room? All of a sudden, the lights come on. The room is filled with balloons and party balloons, and people jump out with party hats, the sound makers, noisemakers, and yell, hell yell, abortion! I mean, surprise is really a better word, okay? But consequently, I was not abused as a child. My dad didn't beat me. My dad didn't berate me. It was basically, I was just pretty much on my own. I started running the streets when I was 12. I stole my first car when I was 14. I was arrested my first time when I was 14. Spent my first night in jail when I was 14. And when I was 16, here's where these 4 years start. When I was 16 years old, four friends of mine and I went up to the Lincoln Way Motors. Lincoln Way Motors was the Mercury dealer in Massillon, still there, I think. And the five of us, we hotwired two 1966, because that was when I was 16, 1966 Cyclone GT 390, four-speed, 335 horsepower. And we took those cars out. We stole them off the lot, brand new, and flogged them. I mean, we beat them to death. You say, really? Yeah. We left them both alongside the road, sizzling. We didn't set them on fire. We just ran them until they dropped. And, you know, here's one of the things that people, and young people, get this straight too, just in case some crazy thought goes through your mind about committing a crime. You got to be pretty stupid to get caught committing a crime. Most people do not get caught committing a crime. Most people get away with the crime, and then about a week or two later, they get a knock on the door by a cop who hauls them down. And so we got away with it. In fact, the cops chased us on foot that night, but we got away. But about 2 weeks later, black and white unit pulled up in front of my house. Off I went off I went to jail. And I was found guilty of two cases of grand theft auto in 1966. I was 16 years old, and I was sentenced to 6 months in the Mansfield Reformatory. Now, Mansfield Reformatory was like famous. It was kind of like hell inside a brick building. Okay, if you've never been to Mansfield, if you've never been to Mansfield and seen the Reformatory, you still might have seen the Mansfield Reformatory. There is a movie out there called The Shawshank Redemption. It's a movie about a prison, and I guess it opens with this very ominous-looking prison. That's not Shawshank Prison. That's the Mansfield Reformatory. So I was sentenced to 6 months, but because it was the first time I was ever in court for that thing. The judge said, instead of sending you, this is your first offense. First I got caught, but first offense, I'm going to sentence you to 2 years probation. He said, now any time in the next 2 years you violate your probation, it's 6 months in Mansfield. That's when I was 16. All right, now you understand that didn't change my life at all. I didn't quit drinking. I didn't quit running the streets. I didn't quit stealing cars. I didn't quit doing anything. And my probation officer knew it. Now I still remember him. He said this to me one time. I was in reporting to him. And he said this, he said, Gip, I know what you're doing. And he said, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. He said, I am going to catch you jaywalking, and you're going to Mansfield. Well, he knew he wasn't. I never jaywalked. I got drunk. I stole cars. And one night, when I was 17, my best friend and I were out 3 o'clock in the morning, drunk. And we came around, coming between here and the motel, there's several almost 90-degree turns. We're out in the country, and there was a 90-degree turn, and the road made this 90-degree turn, and I made most of the turn. And I went off the road, and I put my car in a ditch. Now, I didn't say I put my car in a ditch. You know what you put in a ditch? You put a tire in a ditch. They can drag you out of a ditch and drive home. This was not a ditch. This was a ditch. What do you put in a ditch? The whole car. How about 1957 Chevy Bel Air? Oh, man. I mean, that was painful. The only thing straight on it when they pulled it out of there, totaled the thing. The only thing was straight. In fact, I'll tell you how deep this ditch was. When you went by on the road, all you could see was the top of the car, below the road level. The top of the car and the trunk lid were the only two things that were straight on it. And I'll never forget it. We still had a car full of beer, so he's handing me beer cans, and I'm throwing them into the woods, like this, still in the car. And then we get out, and there's beer cans laying all over the road, because I really wasn't in any condition to throw anything. And so then we chucked them into the woods, and for like 2 or 3 months, guys from my high school would go out in the woods and they would find treasure. But I thought, oh no, man, the cops are going to come. And here I am, I'm drinking underage, and I violate my probation. I am going to Mansfield. So this state trooper came, and I'm sitting in his car, and he's asking me what happened. He said, what happened that you put the car in a ditch? I said, I passed out. I said, I just passed out. He said, were you drinking? I said, no, I wasn't drinking. He said, Sam, how old are you? I said, I'm 17. He said, Sam, do you know that it's against the law in the state of Ohio to drink before you're 18 years old, when you're 17 years old? I said, oh, yes, I do. He goes, have you been drinking tonight? I said, no, sir. And he's talking a little bit. Then he goes, how old are you, Sam? I said, 17. He goes, Sam, do you know it's against the law in the state of Ohio to drink when you're 17 years old? And I thought, isn't it sad to see Alzheimer's strike right next to you? I mean, there he sat, and it hit him. And he said, you know it's against the law to drink when you're 17 years old in the state of Ohio? I said, yes, sir. He said, have you been drinking tonight? I said, no, sir. And all of a sudden, he just blew up. And he looks at me, he goes, well, you must have been, because he says, one of us has, and it ain't been me. And I just looked at him and said, well, it must have been, because it ain't been me. And I don't know if it was the audacity or what, but he didn't nail me, so I didn't go to prison. But, now, you can do something I cannot do. Look at this. See this? If I do that to my forehead, I won't walk out of here. I can't take that kind of a hit. But if you do this to your forehead and have a brainwave, any time in the next 2 months, it'll come back that you've got a mental problem, a problem with the wiring. I don't have a mental problem. Anyway, the very next day, this is 1967, I'm 17 years old. The very next day, the very doctor who 5 years later would also overlook my broken neck did a brainwave. And he got it back, and it showed there was a problem. He said, the brainwave shows you're a petite mal epileptic. And I thought this. I'm very pragmatic. I said, I will be anything he wants me to be if it keeps me out of Mansfield. So I end up a petite mal epileptic. When I was 18, now some of you will remember, or some of you you men, you might have got in the military, army probably, because of the draft. You turned 18, you signed up for the draft, and you got a letter from the government saying you are in the Army. But around 68 and 69, and maybe only for those 2 years, it was very, very 2-3 years, they went from the draft to the lottery. And what they did is they took all the males of the year, of the country, and they divided them by birthdays, the first third of the year, the second third of the year, and the third third of the year. And if you were in the first third, you were going. If you were in the second third, you were probably going to get drafted. If you were in the third third, get a day job. You're staying home. I was in April, so I was early in the second third. And I thought, man, I'm gone. So I just waited my 18th year to get the letter from the draft board, and I never got drafted. When I was 19, I remember I went downtown Canton. I went to the Marine recruiter. And I remember walking, I still remember what I told him. I walked up to this Marine recruiter. I said, I want to join the Marines. I want to go to Vietnam. I want to kill people. Now, you would think that would make a Marine recruiter happy. It did. Man, it was Christmas for him, and it wasn't Christmas, but he was thrilled. Honest, guys, I just wanted to go kill people. So I said, I want to join the Marines, and I want to go kill people. I want to go to Vietnam. I want to kill people. And so he's signing me up. He's recruiting me. And then all of a sudden, he says this. He goes, he's looking at my draft card. Now, everybody knows two things about a draft card as far as ratings. There's 1A and 4F. 1A, you're good for military service. 4F, you're not. I was not 1A because of that screwed up brainwave, but I was not 4F. I was not dismissed, unable to go. He said, I can't recruit you. I said, why not? He said, you're 1Y. I said, well, what does that classification mean? He says, I can only recruit you, you can only join the military in a national emergency or declared war. And he said, Vietnam has not been declared a national emergency, and it's not a declared war. He said, I can't recruit you. I'm saying that for this reason. When I was 19 years old, I tried to get in the Marine Corps, I tried to get in the military, I never did. Do you know what that means to guys who have been in Marines? Nothing.
you know, I went to Pensacola Bible Institute, and I'll get these guys, and I go, oh, you know, I was going to go to PBI. And I go, oh, yeah, that's great. You know what that means to me? Nothing.
And guys, here's the thing. There are some people in the Lord's service. They are in the Lord's military. They are in the Lord's army. And a lot of people go, yeah, that's me, that's me. You know, I saw this this video. I think it was on the news. And there's some guy, he's got his army jacket on. He's got his company patch on. He's got his military medals on. And he's, you know, he's got his piece of cardboard with a piece of, you know, help me, I'm a vet and I need money. And this guy walks up to him and says, you're in the army?
Yeah.
You're in such company?
Yeah.
He said, you got these medals?
Yeah.
He said, then how come your company patch is on the wrong shoulder? And he said, how come your medals are in the wrong order? He said, I was in that company. And man, when he said this guy thought, it's time to go home. And this guy is literally walking beside that guy and he said, it's called stolen valor. That's what they call it, stolen valor. Some guy that's never been in the military puts on a military uniform and tries to get people to look up to him, like, ooh, look what she did for the country. Did nothing for the country. And this guy's walking beside him. He said, you get that uniform off. He said, don't you ever put that uniform on in public again. You see, somebody that's been in the military doesn't appreciate somebody who's not been in the military pretending they've been in the military. So here's the first thing. If you are a soldier for Christ, because I am not going to question you, but I'm going to give you some questions, and you answer them to yourself. Don't put them down on a piece of paper. Don't give me your answers. I'm not going to judge you on this. But if you say to me, if I say, are you a soldier for Christ? And you say, yeah, I am. Okay, my first question. When did you join? I can remember, I've never been in the military, but I can remember the day I walked into the Marine recruiter and tried to join, and I never got in. Your pastor's a Marine. You know how he became a Marine? He told me one time. He said he always liked the Marines. He was never against the Marines. And one night he went to bed and he woke up and he had a Marine uniform on and he said, wow, I must be a Marine. Now, you know why you guys are laughing at that? Because every one of you know that's not what happened. Ask him. I have not even asked him. Ask him. I have never met anyone in the military that didn't know two things. They knew the exact minute they got in and the exact minute they're getting out. And I'll bet you he can tell you the day he got in. He knew the day that when that morning that sun came up, he was not in the Marine Corps. And when that sun went down that night, he was in. I have never met anybody in the military, be it Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, whatever. I've never met anybody that said, well, I just found myself in a uniform one day and I thought I must be one. They got in. Maybe they got drafted. I knew a guy got drafted in the Marine Corps because he was drafted and he's down at the Army Depot to get in, and some Marine recruiter comes in and says, all you guys, get down and give me 25 push-ups. And there were only so many guys could actually do 25 push-ups. So all you guys can do 25. Follow me. He said, I was in the Marines. I could do 25 push-ups, and I ended up in the Marine Corps. You know, I was a youth director 40 years ago, and I had somebody, they liked me, and they gave me a letter opener. It was the coolest letter opener I've ever owned. I loved it. It was a miniature M1 bayonet. I got rid of it. I couldn't keep it. You know why? It wasn't because I, ooh, that's about war. And I, no, man. I kept opening the letters like this. That's hard on a check. Anyway, no, here was the problem. When they gave it to me, they said this, you remind me of a Marine. So on the blade, before they gave it to me, they had engraved United States Marine Corps. And every time I'd pick that up, I'd look up at United States Marine Corps and I'd go, I know your business having this. And I went to a pastor friend, Tarkington. He was a Marine helicopter pilot. I went down to him and I said, Jim, I said, somebody gave me this letter opener and I like it, but it says United States Marine Corps. And I said, I got no business having this. I want you to have it because you are a Marine. Guys, I did not feel right. The Fight On books that I held up the other day, if you look at the introduction, the man that did the introduction asked. He liked me, believe it or not. He's a saved man, and he was a lieutenant colonel in Special Forces in Vietnam. He was a Green Beret, and he liked me. And he said,
I want to write the introduction for your book. So he did. And then one day, he gave me a black baseball hat. You ever see a guy, an officer in the military, and the bill on their cover has a bunch of scrambled eggs and the gold braiding? He gave me this black baseball hat with the gold braiding, and across the front it said, Combat Infantryman. Now, I don't know if you know that, but that is a pretty proud thing. Well, that's just a grunt. Yeah, that's what keeps you alive. That hat never went on this head. You know why? Because when I put that hat on, if I'd have put that hat on, it would have been an affront. It would have been an insult to anybody who ever really was a combat infantryman. Guys, what I'm telling you is this. I was not in the military, but there are people that were in the military, and we don't appreciate people pretending they were in the military when they were not. But I want you to know this. I am a soldier for Jesus Christ. I remember when I enlisted. It was right after I got saved, 10 weeks after I got saved. I left Ohio, went down to Pensacola, Florida. I'm in Bible college. It was a revival meeting in January. I'd never been to a revival meeting, being raised Roman Catholic. And I don't know what the guy preached that night, but I can still remember. I think I got it marked down in my first Bible. And if I remember it right, it was January 21st, 1971. I came down, and you know how, listen, I wanted in the Lord's service so bad, I got on my knees and asked him if I could join. Guys, that has been a costly decision. Not that I have any regret for any of it. But what I'm saying is that anybody in the military remembers when they got in. I'm in the Lord's service. I'm not a soldier, but I'm the Lord. I'm one of the Lord's soldiers. I know I am. I know. I remember when I got in. So if you're in the Lord's, if you're in the Lord's army, if you're a soldier, go back in your mind. Go back in your mind. Can you remember when you got in? Because if you can't remember when you got in, don't try to wear the uniform. Don't try to say, oh yeah, I'm a soldier. No, just lie when they ask if you love God. Just do that one. Don't try to tell people that you're a soldier. The second thing, if you are a soldier, I have a question. Who is your enemy? Oh my goodness, man. Don't ask the 20, 30-somethings that. Who's your enemy? Oh, I don't want any enemies. Well, you just got one. Guys, Do you know, I think Rush Limbaugh, he has the best description of the military. He said their job is to kill things and break people. Or kill people and break things. That's what they do. They kill people and break things. You say, ooh, that sounds terrible. That's why we're free. That is why we're free. I pray for our military every single day. Every day. Before I go to bed tonight, I will pray for every person in every branch of our military service. I don't even know who they are. And if I knew some of them, I wouldn't even like them. And I ask God to protect every one of them. Because they are there for you and they are there for me. And guys, do you know why we have a military? Because we have enemies. I was preaching in New Zealand. And New Zealand did a really stupid thing. New Zealand disbanded their Air Force. And they disbanded their Air Force because the Prime Minister and the government said, well, we're a peace-loving people. And since we love peace, who would want to wage war on us? And I want to say, can you say China? They were renting the Australian Air Force. You say, well, that'll work until Australia's attacked. Because when somebody comes down and attacks Australia and attacks New Zealand, and one of those has got to be defended, guess who's going to be defended, guess who's not? They found that that didn't work, and they've reinstated their Air Force. But guys, I'm going to tell you something. If you're in the Lord's service, if you're a soldier, you better have an enemy. So what I'm asking you, who do you want to hurt? Oh, I don't want to hurt anybody. Oh, well, try it. You know, I'm a Baptist. I love being a Baptist. You know why? Let me tell you why I like being a Baptist. Baptist never gossip. No, they don't. You didn't know that? I will prove it right now. Watch. How many of you people would raise your hand and say, I am a dirty, rotten gossip? Right there. Not a one. Baptists never gossip. Now, Baptists can split a church with a prayer request. Well, pray for our pastor, you know. He He used an illustration today that he used 17 years ago, and it's obviously God's done with him here, but he doesn't know it. You know, I believe this, people. I really do. If you have a Christian, he has a gun, he's only got one bullet, and he sees the devil. Think about that. If you could just eliminate the devil with one shot, you would bring so much peace to the world. You would eliminate so much grief, so much horror. Isn't that true? If you just take him out with one bullet, and just about to shoot the devil, there's a preacher that he doesn't like. I'm telling you, if he saw the devil and a preacher he didn't like, and he only had one bullet, the devil would get a pass every single time. Guys, I am not waging war on my brethren. But you know, there's some folks that I'm trying to upset. I upset somebody just before I came here. They're upset right now. So what'd you do? I don't think anybody else here has got this. If I get a text and I don't recognize the phone number, I just delete it. And then one day, Kathy said, somebody's been sending me texts and they're pornography. And I looked and I said, well, I'm getting those. So I got one just before service. I decided what I was going to, because I would just delete them. I just delete it. I wouldn't even open it. I just delete it. But I thought, I'm tired of getting them. I got one on Thanksgiving. I don't like that idea. And I got one on Sunday. I really don't like that idea. So I just cut and paste Genesis 1:1 and sent it back. Then I cut and pasted Genesis 1:2 and sent it. 1:3, 1:4, 1:5. Whoa, you wouldn't believe all this. Stop. Who are you? Now, I can't repeat everything they said, okay? But after the fifth verse, I said this. There are 31,102 verses in the Bible. And as long as I get your stuff, I said, I'm going to send you scripture every time you send me porn. Then I sent them 1:6, 1:7, 1:8, 1:9, and 1:10. And then I said, if you want this to stop, take my number off your list. Then I said 11 and 12 and 13 and 14 and 15. And then I said, I'm going to stop for now. It's your choice. Now, I know a lot of them are 770 numbers. That's Georgia. I know that. That's the Atlanta area. Do you know something right now? There are some people in Georgia. They are so angry at me. And I am so happy about that. Do you understand? You say, well, I just don't want anybody to dislike me. Are you out of your mind? Someone's always going to dislike you. I realized a long time ago somebody's going to dislike me. So you know what I tried to do? I tried to decide who it would be. I was talking to a preacher one time, and he said, oh, I was talking to a preacher, he didn't like you. I said, that's okay. He goes, well, don't you want to know who he is? I said, no, I don't. He goes, well, you know what he's upset about? I said, well, okay, tell me. He goes, he didn't like what you say about the King James Bible being perfect. I said, oh, good. I said, well, I'm glad he didn't like me. I mean, he dislikes me for the right reason. Guys, there ought to be somebody you're just going to ruin their day. There ought to be somebody like that. And I don't try. Do you know that most of the wars this nation got in, somebody else started them with us? And that is exactly my feeling. You know, I pattern myself after the average American soldier. You know what the average American soldier does? Just look at him. World War I, World War II, even Vietnam, Korea. When they engage the enemy, they are ferocious, they are merciless, and they kill them. And 30 minutes after the battle, only American soldiers are passing out candy to the kids. UN soldiers are raping them. American soldiers are being nice to them. And I am nice to everybody except somebody that acts like they're in the devil's army. If they act they're in the devil's army, I'm going to rip their head off. I'm going to ruin their day. I'm going to make them never want to do whatever they did again. I had a guy, he had a very foul T-shirt on. And here's what I said. Now, I try to be gracious. It said Led Zeppelin, live and uncensored. I don't care if you have a T-shirt like that. Just don't wear it outside. And we're in a burger place. And now, here's me. I want to go after him. But how do I know that's God? It's just my flesh. So I told the Lord this. I said, Lord, I said, see that guy with the T-shirt? I said, he's yours. Now, guys, I don't know how many square feet there are in the surface of the world. I could probably check. I'm sure Wikipedia could tell me. Square feet.
That is not very big. That is smaller than the portion of this pulpit that my Bible's on. 12 inches by 12 inches. And here's what I told God. I said, God, see that guy, that t-shirt? I said, he's yours. And I said, you see this 1 square foot right in front of me? I said, this is mine. And I said, I won't do anything or say anything to him unless he steps on mine. And so I'm watching. And he got his burger and went clear over there to the other side of the restaurant. I said, okay. So I got up and they had one of those condiment bars where you get the tomatoes and the whatever stuff, you know. And there's a crowd of people. This was before COVID. We were all coughing on each other, sneezing. And there was a big guy in front of me. And this big guy stepped aside. And the guy in front of him took a step back right there. And I'm reading this. Led Zeppelin. Live and uncensored. He's mine. Say, what did you do? I will simply say this. I ruined his day. You say, did you witness to him? No, I did not. No. Look, you don't witness to the... You mark this down. I got a John commentary. You ought to get it. The Gospel of John was a military march by Jesus Christ. You find two things happening in the Gospel of John you don't find anywhere else. You will find him, he engages his enemies. It'll be the Pharisees. It'll be somebody who comes to him and they'll try to trap him. Now mark it. He never tries to win an enemy. He engages them. He humiliates them. He pounds them. He sends them away squawking like a dog. And right after one of those occasions, there's a verse and you'll see it. It's two lines. You know what it says? It says something like this. And many believed on him. You know why? Because in 1990, there was a nation, Iraq, there was a nation, Kuwait, and Iraq invaded Kuwait, and now Kuwait had two kinds of people in it. It had the Kuwaitis who needed liberated, and the Iraqis who needed thrown out. And then another group came in called the United States Army, and they would engage the Iraqi army. They didn't say, hey guys, you want to get along? Let's be friends. You know what they did? They killed them. They never tried to win them. They killed them. And every time they killed them, you know what they did? They drove the Iraqi army back and liberated Kuwaitis. See, well, how do I know when somebody's in the devil's army? It's real easy. They shoot at you. Did he shoot at you? With his t-shirt. He sure did. And so I shot him. Now, he got the gospel, so he can do something about it. You say, well, I just don't think you should be that way. That's why you're not in the army. That's why you shouldn't raise your hand when somebody asks if you're a soldier. The third thing. If you are in the Lord's army, who are you supporting? I don't know if you know this. I don't know how this statistic breaks down for the military services of any other nation. But the last I checked, in our military, this is the average. Out of every 10 people in the military, one is engaged in combat. In other words, you got one guy out there, like I told you, the combat infantryman. He's out there trying to shoot the enemy. And there are 9 others supporting him. Now, don't you go, well, see, that's the whole problem. They got, well, you watch your mouth because nobody's trying to kill you right now. And I have a problem with this. I'll be honest. I have a problem with one viewpoint that Christianity has. And our viewpoint is this. We think everybody has got to be in the foxhole and on the front line trying to engage the enemy. You know, not everybody's good for that. I was talking to a Marine Lieutenant Colonel several years ago, and I said, you have two kind of lines in the military. You got enlisted men and officers. An enlisted is an E1, E2, all the way to E9. With an officer, it's O1, O2, and on up the line. And he starts out as a second lieutenant, then a lieutenant, and then a captain. And then a major, and then a lieutenant colonel, and then a colonel. I believe I got that right. And I said, at what rank does an officer quit leading? You know, in the American military, at what rank does an American officer no longer lead troops into combat? He said, we lead troops into combat right up to colonel, which I was shocked. Well, that's why the generals don't. A general sends 4 armies in at one time. How can he lead anybody? I don't know if you ever saw Norm Schwarzkopf during the Gulf War, but I don't think he could have passed through Army boot camp. He was a little bit overweight. He was. But you know who he was? There was a smart-mouthed reporter got on him, and he looked at me and said, "You ever been in a minefield?" Because when Norm Schwarzkopf was a major in the U.S. Army in Vietnam, he had a company, and they got into a minefield. One of his guys got blown up and killed, and about three of them stepped on mines. He said, "Everybody stay still." Then he walked through that minefield and carried every wounded man of his company out of there and got them out of there. That's why he got to be a general. But by the time he was up to where the Gulf War started, the first Gulf War, he laid the blueprint for the entire victory. He couldn't lead a company of soldiers. And so I say this, I don't have a problem. Think about this. If you say, "Well, I think 100% of our soldiers ought to be in battle." Really? How would you like to be in battle and you get wounded? Medic? Oh, we don't have medics anymore. Corpsman? We don't have any corpsmen anymore. They're all in the battle. I'm hungry. Oh, we don't have any cooks. They're all in the battle. Hey, you know, the tank broke down. Oh, no mechanics. They're all in the battle. No pilots. All in the battle. We put them all on the front line. They all die. You know what I think? I think you young men ought to be knocking on the doors. I do not think he should be knocking on the doors. Now, ask him. I will guarantee you, go back 29 years and he was banging on doors all over this place. But after a while, you know what happens? Hey, guys, it's usually the 18-year-olds that go in there. You say, "Oh, yeah, they send the 18." That's 18-year-old guys want to kill something. I mean, if killing and breaking things is... Can you imagine doing that and being allowed? Join the military. And so if you're not... I'd have no problem if you say, "Well, I'm just not good at door-to-door work. I'm not going to call you a coward." You know what I'm going to tell you? Then support somebody that is. Could I tell you a smart person? I don't know if you have a smart person in your church or not. But let me tell you how you could be a smart person. Do you guys know what a designated offering is? A designated offering. I don't know who came up with this, but this is a good idea. This ranks right up there with the Chinese buffet, the designated offering. That's where I give you the money and tell you how to spend it. I'll give you an example. Some years ago, I heard about a preacher. I was pastoring in New York. He was here in Ohio somewhere. I have never talked to him. I have never met him. Our paths have never crossed. We had one cross communication, interaction. Tom Crowley called me many years ago, and he said, "Pray for this preacher." He said his church is trying to run him off. He said they're not tithing. The guy's starving, and they're just really being brutal to him. And so I sent him $100, because $100, I was saving up $100 to take my wife out to eat. It's all I had. So I sent it to him. But let me tell you something, guys, and I don't know what you ever think about preachers. Oh, preachers are all about money. I'm going to say this about your pastor, and it's true about 95, maybe 99% of pastors. If they really bad need money, and somebody gives them money, and somebody in their church bad needs money, they will take the money given to them and give it to the person in their church. And they'll shortchange their pastor, their family every time. So I sent this guy this $100. And I didn't want him to get it and then give it to one of his church members. So I made it a designated offering. That's where I give it to him, tell him how to spend it. I said, "When this money gets to you," I said, "here's what I want you." I said, "This is a designated offering. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this $100, $90. I know he's going to tithe it. I said, I want you to take this $90, and I said, I want you to take your wife out to eat. Find a nice place and just take her out to eat." Now, I don't believe, at least back then in the early 80s, I don't believe anybody could spend $90 two people in a restaurant, so there's going to be some money left over. So I said, "With what's left over, I want you to take the rest of it and go to take your wife to the mall and buy her new dress." Now, I don't know this man. "Oh, you knew his wife." "No, I don't know his wife." "No, I don't even know her name." I'll tell you what I know. I knew this back then. I knew, even though I don't know this guy, he's going to get through this because he's a man. I told you, he's going to go out behind the barn, he's going to shake his fist at God a couple times, say something stupid, then repent of it, but he's going to keep on going because he's a man. Men will get through this. It's harder on the pastor's wife. So I figure if we get her through this, they'll do all right. That was my letter to him. About 2 weeks later, I got a letter back from him. He thanked me for it. He thanked me for the money. But the most amazing thing was this. He said, the real blessing of your offering was that your letter got to our house on April 18th.
Well, April 18th is like 3 days late for taxes, but other than that, I don't know what it's good for. He said, April 18th is our wedding anniversary. And he said, because of the problems in the church this year, I didn't have any money to take my wife out for anniversary or buy her a dress. Now, I'm going to tell you something tonight. You guys are going to be so glad you came to church. You are. Listen, and you know, we tell you to do things and you never do what we tell you. You're all going to do what I tell you. You're going to be so glad. Here's what I'm going to say. Every one of you, in the next 7 days, between now and next Sunday, here's what I want you to do. Go to your favorite store, men, at Bass Pro Shop, what is the other, Cabela's, the Craftsman section of Sears. Ladies, Hobby Lobby, Joanne Fabric. Anyway, go to your favorite store and spend $100 on yourself. Whoa. Can you imagine doing that this week? Go, well, I'm just doing what we had a visiting preacher and he told us to do this. I'm just obeying the preacher. Go ahead, really do it. It won't be sin. But mark this down. You'll never get the joy spending $100 on yourself that I did spending it on a soldier in God's army. I was at a church. We had a dinner at a restaurant, you know, with the pastor and a bunch of church members. And I'm sitting in this restaurant right around the corner. Sitting near the table is an old white-haired guy. And he has so many of them now. He's in his 70s, and he's got this baseball hat on. It says Vietnam veteran. I think some of those guys, when they got out of the military, they burned their uniform, said, I don't ever want to hear about the military again. Then when their white hair turned white, they all got on my baseball cap. They just want to let you know they did something for the country. And I looked over at him. I said, you were in Vietnam. Yeah. I said, what branch of service? He says, Air Force. And I had a guy in my church who was in the Air Force. He loaded bombs on B-52s. And I said, and you could just tell when I said, were you in the Army? I said, what branch were you in? He goes, I was Air Force. And I said, were you in Vietnam? He goes, yeah. I mean, you just see, he was so proud of having served his country. I said, what'd you do in the Air Force? Man, I am telling you, you talk about crestfallen. He literally went like this. He went, I was a clerk. I said, I don't care if you were a clerk. I said, you did more for this country militarily than I ever have. I got news for you. They pay our soldiers. Aren't you glad they have clerks? And so here's what I'm going to tell you, people. Let me tell you about the smart person in your church. This designated offering, I wish we had designated taxes. I pay my taxes. But I sure wish I could designate them. I'd give them all to the military. I'd want them all to be bombs and bullets. I would rather do that than support some guy living under a bridge and burning a building for the Democrats. You want to be smart? You want to be intelligent? You want to not knock on doors? Maybe not even pass tracks. You want to be smart? I told you, every time I come to a new church, I look for a track rack and I look for a mission display of some kind. If you're smart, I really believe this. I don't believe that any church should buy gospel tracts. I really don't. I don't think this church should ever. You say, wait a minute, you said we ought to have a track rack. I do. And I think it has tracts in it. I said I don't think that the church ought to buy the tracts. If you were smart, you know what some member of this church would do? Preacher, order the tracts, give me the bill. Ooh. You know that Understandable History is in its 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's the fourth edition, but it's about the seventh or eighth printing of the book. I did the first printing. There was only 1,000 copies. And you know how we got the second edition printed? Some guy sold his house and said, I want to pay for the second printing of your Understandable History. That was clear back in 19, it's like 89 or something like that. So this guy bought the printing of 5,000 Understandable Histories of the Bible. I know of only what happened to only one of those. I don't know the whole story on all 5,000. But there was a pastor in Minnesota who somebody gave him the Understandable History. He's flying on a plane. He read that book, got converted to the King James Bible, and some guy that never even met him is going to get credit for that. I'm all for it. So guys, you know what you ought to do? Support somebody who's in the service. Find some way. These guys, you know, I know it. You ask your pastor. These guys get so excited about getting a letter. I didn't say an email. They get excited about getting a letter. And find out when their birthdays are and send them something, or send them something at Christmas. Pray for them every day. Do something, all right? But if you're not going to go out there, look, if you say, well, I'm just not good at talking to people. Some guys are good at talking to people. I don't think I could kill anybody. Ooh, that guy likes to kill people. Why don't you just go do it? Get help, just buy the bullets for him and turn him loose. Buy the gospel tracts and let him go down the street. Let him knock on the doors. Let him do the work. When I was youth director, I would tell our people, our young people, to help each other. And one night after visitation, one of my young men came in, and he had led two people to the Lord on visitation. And he was glad, but he said, and this guy was always there. He was always on visitation. And he said, you know, Brother Gip, I almost didn't come to visitation tonight. I said, why not? Because he just was always there. He said, I only had $2 in my wallet. And he said, I got to go to work tomorrow. And he said, $2 would give me enough gas to get to work or to go on visitation tonight. And I knew if I went to visitation tonight, I wouldn't have enough gas to go to work tomorrow. But I decided to come to visitation. And as soon as he said it, I just took my wallet out and I was going to give him a $20 bill. And he goes, don't bother. He goes, a bunch of the other guys already did it. They gave me $20 to fill my car. That's the way it ought to be. When these missionaries, look, you get a missionary behind this pulpit, you know what you ought to do? Go to Walmart, buy him a $50 or $100 Walmart card and say, take that. Buy a restaurant card for him, because a lot of them, they can't afford to take their wife out to dinner. Say, hey, follow me to this gas station down here. It's only $1.79. Hey, you got a gas station right here. Say, when we pull out of here, you pull in there, I'll fill your car up with gas. Do something. Support the people that are. You can be in. You don't have to be in the battle. If you are a soldier for Christ, let me ask you this. What's your theater of operation? World War II, that was easy to define. There were two theaters in World War II. There was the European theater. There was the Pacific theater. My dad was drafted. Let me tell you when my dad got drafted. He got drafted when he was 33 years old. You know, we put a guy in the military. We put him in combat for 1 year and bring him home. It's called a tour of duty. I'm not sure that's the greatest way to do it. My dad got drafted. You know how long he got drafted for? The paper said this: 1 year or the duration of the war. What that meant was that when they swore him in and he became a member of the U.S. Army, he ended up in the Air Corps. But if the war ended 2 days after he got in, they would keep him for a year and turn him loose. But I don't know if you know this, they thought that war was gone until 1950. He'd have been in there every day. He got drafted in 1941. That's when we got into the war. You know when he got out? When Japan surrendered, 1945. My dad was in for the entire war. Guys, but he was in the Pacific Theater. He was never in Europe. I had an uncle, his brother. He was with Patton in Sherman tanks in Europe. He told me, he said, one time we were out in the flats, and he said, we got caught by a tiger. Now, he said, we had a 76-millimeter gun. And he said, there wasn't anything on that tiger that our round would penetrate. No matter where we hit it, it's going to bounce off. And he said, this tiger came out like this. And he said, all of a sudden, the turret started traversing. And he said, we were watching death come our way. And he said, the tank commander told our gunner, shoot him! The gunner says, sir, it'll bounce off. He said, shoot him! He said, sir, there ain't any place I can hit him. And he said, all the time this happened, the turret is coming their way. And he said, that turret got about 45 degrees, and the tank commander said, take the shot! And the last thing they did before they died, he squeezed off that round, that 76-millimeter shell went, hit that tiger between the turret and the hull, and jammed the turret. He said, I never knew a Sherman tank could go so fast backwards. I didn't know till he died. How do you get 4 bronze stars in a tank? So, what's your theater of operation? If you don't know, let me tell you. I can say it. I'll say it in code. Bysville, Ohio. And the surrounding area. You know, these people, you know, their area, you can read it. You know, I pray for your missionaries. Here's what you could do. This, I do this on my own. When I come into a church,
I find the mission letters if I can, and I go one by one, and I mention each name, and yours is, I thank you. Sometimes missionaries don't even have their country easy to see on their letter, but you guys have their name and their country. And so it was very easy. I went down this side, and then I went up this side, and I prayed for every one of those missionaries. You can do that when you come into church. Instead of sitting down and finishing your text or your phone or whatever, just go from one to the other and say, bless that person in that country. God, take care of that person right now in that country. Help that person in that ministry. You say, well, that's not much. If you said, God bless all the evangelists, I'd take it. You don't ever have to mention my name again in prayer. If you'll say, God bless the evangelists, I'm in there. You don't have to say broken neck. You don't have to say health. You don't have to say nothing. If you don't have to say my name. If you'll just pray for the evangelists, I will be thrilled. Okay? And say, and I know people say, well, God bless the missionaries everywhere in the world. Well, that's okay. But you can come in here and you say, God bless that one right there. And they may be going through something, and help them. And then if you see they got a need, send them something. But your theater is here. And so, if you're in the army, what's your theater of operation? You know what mine is? Mine is the book. My theater is the world, mainly the country, but I deal with the King James Bible and the history of the Bible. If you're in the military, and I've only got, I'll be done here. I only got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Somebody want to order some pizza for later? What is your military objective? You say, what's a military objective? Well, the enemy's on that hill. We take the hill. That's the objective. You know what it is? You have an attack. You know what every attack has before it goes off? What's the condition of the battlefield when this attack is over? Well, we killed a bunch of them. They killed a bunch of us. But we stayed right where we were. That's called World War I. I mean, it had no man's land. They machine gunned each other. They bombed each other. They mined each other. And they sat there and looked at each other. But a military objective is they got that hill. We're going after that hill. And when this battle's over, brother, we're going to have that hill. What I'm telling you is this. I said it this yesterday. Maybe I said it this morning. In case you're not aware of it, you're dying. Every person in this room is dying. I am dying. And if the Lord tarries, I'm going to die. Or He's going to take me out of here. But if I die, my objective, what is my military objective? It's what I want the sum total of my life to be. You know, I would like my life to be more than the sum total of the groceries I've eaten. I mean, really, you know, when you come here, what do you do? What do? You just turn groceries into fertilizer? You turn oxygen into CO2? That's what your whole life has been? That's what you're going to say at the end of this thing? When this is over. You know, I was talking to a missionary in Burma, and Hudson Taylor was a missionary in Burma many, many years ago. And I talked to this guy, and I said, "Is whatever happened to his ministry?" He said, "Oh, man." He said, he is still a national hero. I think they celebrate his birthday. And he told me about this vast network of churches that are still in existence because Hudson Taylor was there. You know why? That's the sum total of his life. I told you this morning, you know, your pastor started this church. I don't want nothing to happen to him. I really don't. But if he died tomorrow, you are sitting in something that is the sum total of his life. A military objective. So what do you want your life to be? What? A rack in your den? A fish on the wall? A blue ribbon for your jelly? Oh, somebody's watching your exercise tapes on the internet? I got more viewers than she got. That's something to win, isn't it? Guys, I have two. I don't have a lot. I only have two. I really do. You know what it is? I want every person on this planet, I didn't say saved, I want every man, woman, and child on this planet to worship the right God. You see, even lost people? Yeah, that'll do till they get saved. Let me ask you a question. If somebody keeps the Ten Commandments to the best of their ability, will they go to heaven when they die? No, they won't. But I still wish they'd do it. You say, why? Because you wouldn't have to lock your house when you came to church tonight. And we wouldn't have to worry about somebody getting mad and setting a whole city on fire. You wouldn't have to worry about your children out at night. Guys, hey,
If everybody saved and lost tried to live by the Ten Commandments, we'd have to lay off the police officers. All they could get you for is your seatbelt. So guys, I want every person on this planet to worship God, and I want them to do it using the right book. And that's it. I don't have anything else. So I'm asking you, what's your theater of operation? I want to ask you this one. What has your service cost you? You know, I talk to people and they'll go, well, you know, we got it so that if a guy goes away and goes to the military, he comes back, they're going to give him his job back. That really sounds good. You have no idea how many guys. That is just a bunch of words. Before I got saved, I went to a college to become a computer programmer. I graduated, computer programmer, got saved 11 days later, went into the ministry. I never used it. Computers don't even know the languages I know. When I worked on computers, they went from here to the wall. They had a crank on the side. And when you printed something, it sounded like a machine gun. I mean, that was how it was. And if you are in the computer field, and if you are out of that field for 6 months, you're out of that field. That thing is changing by leaps and bounds. Guys go into the military, and if they're in there for 1 year, 2 years, if they're just called up because they're National Guard or they're reserves, and they go to battle for 1 year, they come back, they can't do the job they had because their job left them behind. And what I'm asking you guys, what's your service cost you? I told you. I like cars. I still like cars. And I like to paint cars. That's what I was doing when I got saved. And right when I got saved, I went to Bible college. I went to Bible college 10 weeks after I got saved. I still had long hair, see-through body shirts, bell-bottoms, open-toed sandals. And I pulled into Bible college in that red, white, and blue Volkswagen. I painted that because I was getting into custom paints. All I wanted was my own paint shop. And so I got saved. 10 weeks later, I had to quit my job. I went down to Bible college, came back the first summer, worked at the body shop again for the summer. At the end of the summer, I told my boss, this is just a two-man shop. And I said, well, Rod, I'm going back down to second year of Bible college. I said, I'll come back up here next summer and work for you again. He goes, no, you won't. I said, why not? He said, I'm selling the whole place and moving to Texas. Now, the whole place was a piece of ground, the body shop, a three-bedroom house, about $15,000 worth of mechanics and body shop tools. He was even going to leave the name. He was just going to lock it up one day, hand the next owner the keys, and move to Texas. He said, I'm selling the whole place and moving to Texas. I said, really? Who are you selling to? He said, I'm selling to you for $7,000. You say, man, that was a deal. Oh, you don't understand. That was more than a deal. That was my dream. If I had my way, I'd be working in a body shop, my body shop today. Oh, I'd probably be retired by now. But that was my dream. It took me about 5 seconds, and I said, no, Rod, not me. God's called me to preach. We left my church. We left the church I was pastoring in upstate New York in 1986. And I had my shop tools. I sold all my body shop tools when I went back into evangelism. You say, why? I'm not going to use them anymore. Man, it was hard for a man to sell his tools. It's like getting rid of my drugs, but I kept those. But guys, what I'm saying is, you say, well, that didn't cost you much. Oh, man, it costs. It cost that lady 33 years without a house. We have grandchildren. We have 10 grandchildren. Our oldest is 17. They live in Idaho now, 300 miles north of us. 4 years ago, my son and his wife went away for a while, and we went up and watched our grandchildren. Our oldest grandchild was 13 years old. It was the first time that grandmother ever watched her grandchildren. You think it didn't cost her? You know, she has never complained. I know she's cried about not having a house. She's cried. She likes to play the piano. Cried about never having a piano. I didn't say she's cried to me. She's not whined to me. She hasn't complained to God. It still hurts. And sometimes you walk away from something, you're never going to have it. Well, what's it cost you? Do you understand there's guys come back from the military, less one arm, less one leg? I read a book. If you like those kind of books, it's called Tough as They Come. The guy was in the army, stepped on a mine. He was a sergeant. He is one of five living quadruple amputees, no arms, no legs. Drives a car. Has two prosthesis legs, two prosthesis arms. You think it hadn't cost him something? You understand tonight, there are some soldiers that went to our wars and they're back home now and don't even know it. It's cost, anybody in the service, it's cost them something. And I'll give you my last question. Maybe you say, preacher, yeah, I remember that. I remember when I went in. I remember when I told the Lord I wanted to serve Him. I remember when I got in the army. Good, good, good. My question, still in. I have not been in the military, but I understand this about it. There's two kinds of people in the military. And this is a big deal between the two of them. I appreciate both of them. There's a guy that gets in, enlists for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever, gets out and goes about his life. And there's the guy that gets in and stays in. And he's known as a lifer. And the lifer doesn't understand the guy that just gets in and gets out. Do you understand some guys inside of 2 years have won the Medal of Honor? I'm not saying the guy that gets in and gets out is not doing his duty. He's done his duty. He's done more than I've done. But the lifer thinks, you would leave this? And the other guy goes, you want to stay here? So I'm asking you this, because I know a lot of guys that got in the Lord's army, but somewhere they climbed a fence. Somewhere they walked out a gate and never looked back. I wonder if I'm talking to somebody. You remember the days you used to knock on doors and you used to win souls. You used to carry gospel tracts. You used to stand up for Jesus Christ on your job. And what happened? Well, I got my feelings hurt. Ooh, that's a tough soldier there. Look, you understand when you go to military into a battle, they're trying to kill you. You say, well, what if they do? Oh, well. Do you understand this too? They're not shooting us yet. I mean, we think if somebody slams the door going door knocking or tears up our track, I was persecuted. You don't know what persecution is. Guys, I'm just asking you this. You know, I'm talking to somebody. Maybe there's a time when you say, man, I used to teach Sunday school. I used to do this for God. I remember when I did something for God. I drove a bus. I was watching your bus today. I saw it parked down here. I was so thrilled about it. And then I saw it coming back from delivering kids after church. I'm so thrilled about that. Too bad you don't have a second one. Well, we don't have the driver of the second one. Well, maybe somebody enlisted in the army, drive it. Maybe some kid go to heaven because of it. Let me tell you about this guy. This guy was a personal friend. His name was Bobby. I have never been much bigger than I am. Bobby was about 6'2", 6'3". He weighed about 240, 250 pounds. All muscle. Bright red hair. And Bobby, in my hometown, was known for just being bad news. There were two brothers that came from out of town that terrorized our town. Bobby went and whipped them both at the same time. Now, I am from Massillon, Ohio. And if you guys are familiar with Massillon, that's where pro football got its start. Our Massillon Tigers, my hometown Massillon Tigers, was the first pro football team. They were undefeated for like 7 or 8 years. Until somebody started the second pro football team. But beside that, a town of 33,000 people, our high school stadium seats 24,000 people. It was 1968. The Vietnam War was at its peak. Bobby was just turning about, he was about 17. Looked just a big barrel-chested bull of a guy. And at that time, one of the hottest songs was called The Ballad of the Green Berets. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. And at that time, this will date me, there was no Walmart, there was no Kmart. Bobby went down to Woolworth's and for a dollar and a half bought a Green Beret. And I want you to know, when he put that on, it looked good. We're at a football game, and it was halftime, and we all went down to go get some hot dogs or whatever, and Bobby is just coming through the crowd like this. He wasn't being ugly, but he just... And people just got out of his way.
And we're kind of coming in the wake, and Bobby's ahead of me, and over here, something catches my eye. There's a black guy. This black guy's just buying some refreshments, hot dogs, whatever. He wasn't as big as Bobby. I'd say maybe Bobby was 6'2". This guy might have been just maybe a little under 6 foot. He wasn't the bull of a guy that Bobby was. But this guy's paying. He happened to look over his shoulder. He saw Bobby. And I'm telling you, he left his change. He left his food. He's coming toward Bobby. Bobby didn't see him coming. He's coming through the crowd like this. And he is pushing people. I thought, whoa, something's about to happen. And Bobby's walking through this crowd like this. And this guy stepped right in front of him. Cut him off. And I thought, oh. I saw Bobby, these two hams that he called hands, they folded up into fists. I watched the red come up in his face until it was the same color as his hair, and I thought, oh, this guy is going to wish he never stopped Bobby tonight. And Bobby just welled up like this. Before he could do anything, this black guy said this. Point that green beret. He said, "You earned that!" And I saw the color drain back out of Bobby's face. And I watched those hands go limp. And he went, no. Take it off. I earned mine. I watched him take that green beret off. I never saw that thing on his head again. He went in the Army. He went to Vietnam, 82nd Airborne. He did his job. But the guy that had earned it didn't like the guy that didn't earn it, wasn't even in the military yet pretending that he was. Do you understand? Now, if you want to say you're saved, I don't doubt you. I really don't. If you say you love the Lord, even if I doubt you, I'm not going to confront you. But you watch this. I'm a soldier. Because if you're a soldier, you know when you joined. You know who you're fighting. You know who you're supporting. You know where your theater of operation is. You know what your military objective is. You know what your services cost you. And the question is, are you still in? I'd like you to stand with your heads bowed. Your heads bowed and your eyes closed. I'm not gonna guilt trip anybody who has ever said, I'm in the Army and you're really not. I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to say is this. If you're not in, you look at this as a church. It is a church. But tonight it would be a recruitment office. Maybe somebody would like to join. Some of you young people, get in the fight. Maybe somebody would like to say, Lord, I want in. I know guys. They wanted in so bad. They got on their knees and they cried. God, let me serve you. And they gave their lives, cost them their health and their marriages, that they served God till they died. You understand why when everybody just throws a hand up and pretends, it's a little upsetting. You want to join tonight? Maybe come down and say, God, look, I'm not good on that front line, but I will support somebody. I will help somebody go down those streets. I will fill their car. I will buy their tracks. I will do something. Maybe somebody in here tonight, you remember the days when you were in. You remember when you knocked on doors. You remember when you wore out shoes for God. You remember the last time you won somebody to Christ and how good it felt, and it's been so long. Maybe somebody needs to re-up tonight and re-enlist and say, God, I want to get back in the battle. I'm asking you tonight, are you a soldier? You don't have to be. And if you're not, you can at least leave that way. And I will say this, much as I like cars, I wouldn't trade what I'm doing to have a body shop. I wouldn't trade what I'm doing to be retired, a rich man, having 10 shops. Nope. I'll take this any day. Father, thank you for Jesus Christ. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to serve you. God, you know, our service, Kathy and I, it's been costly. But it hadn't cost our lives. And it's been so good. And God, to influence anybody to do something for you, to give you some kind of glory and honor, man, what a blessing. Now, I'm not going to ask these people how many of them are a soldier for you. But if anybody ever does ask that,
Let them think about it before they put their hand up. And maybe tonight somebody could actually see serving you as more important than serving themselves. I don't think these people are serving the devil. They'll pass the devil up any time. But they'll pass you up too. They're just going to serve themselves. God, don't let them do that. I hope somebody joins up tonight. I hope somebody gets in the fight and gets some medals while there's still medals to be got. So I pray, God, as much as I want you to bless your people, what I'd really like tonight is for somebody, one of your people, to bless you. I hope that happens here tonight. In Jesus Christ's name I pray. Amen.